I did a lot of research going back into history and looking at who were the pioneers who donned a suit and a mustache. And, you know, some of it was for survival and, as we know, lesbian history. Some of it was for performance sake. I hope the baby dykes of today know their history. It was a very easy, comfortable character for me. And I thought, oh, this is who my inner man is here. You know, and my motto was, instead of being an angry woman, I became a funny man.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The UN equalizes spousal benefits, Moby Dick drags in a different direction, and Arrivederci Giovanni. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Gary Shaw.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending July 5th, 2014. Saying that equality begins at home, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon announced this week that the United Nations will offer the same spousal benefits to its legally married lesbian and gay employees as those given to heterosexual workers. It doesn't matter if the same-gender marriage is not recognized in a staff member's home country, as long as it was conducted in a jurisdiction that sanctions it. The Secretary General noted that human rights are at the core of the mission of the United Nations. In a media statement, the UN LGBTI employee group, UN Globe, welcomed the policy change, but said a lot of work is still needed to ensure that married same-gender couples are treated equally throughout the organization's many arms and programs, which employ more than 44,000 people worldwide. UN Globe President Hyung Hak Nam said that, "We have to make sure staff members' sons and daughters, our families, not only our partners, are also recognized."
The Finnish Parliament's Legal Affairs Committee has rejected a citizens' initiative to make the country's marriage laws gender neutral. The 10-6 vote against the proposal sends it to the full parliament for debate later this year. The same committee previously defeated a legislative effort to open civil marriage to the country's lesbian and gay couples. That prompted the petition drive that gathered more than 166,000 signatures to force parliament to discuss the matter. Activists remain hopeful that MPs will approve the marriage equality measure when the entire parliament considers it in the next few months. Finland is the only Nordic country without gender-neutral civil marriage laws. Norway and Sweden enacted marriage equality in 2009, followed in 2010 by Iceland and in 2012 by Denmark.
The constitutional ban on civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples in the U.S. state of Kentucky is the latest to be declared federally unconstitutional by a district court. Lawyers representing Democratic Governor Steve Beshear warned that opening civil marriage to same-gender couples would threaten the state's birth rate and economic development. In overturning the law on July 1st, senior U.S. District Court Judge John G. Haburn II ridiculed the argument as not those of serious people, noting that the governor's attorneys never explained how the marriages of lesbian and gay men would affect procreation among heterosexual partners. "Assuring equal protection for same-sex couples," Haburn wrote, "does not diminish the freedom of others to any degree." He immediately stayed his ruling, however, to allow an appeal, so same-gender couples are still banned from civil marriage in the state. Judge Haburn already ruled earlier this year that Kentucky must recognize the civil marriages of same-gender couples who've wed in other states that allow it. Governor Beshear hired private attorneys to represent the state at $125 an hour, after Attorney General Jack Conway, who's also a Democrat, refused to defend the ban. Beshear vowed to appeal, telling reporters that every Kentuckian deserves to get an answer on this very difficult and controversial issue. The case now heads to the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, where judges are already scheduled to hear arguments in marriage equality cases from Ohio, Michigan, and Tennessee in a single session.
Indiana Attorney General Greg Zoeller has warned clerks who issued marriage licenses to same-gender couples in his state last week not to issue any more. After U.S. District Judge Richard Young struck down Indiana's civil marriage ban on June 25th but didn't issue a stay, dozens of couples flocked to county offices across the state to get marriage licenses. An appeals court issued a stay of the ruling on June 28th, so the marriages of same-gender couples who married in the interim remain in legal limbo pending a final resolution of the issue. A federal appeals court earlier this week did order the state to recognize the civil marriage of an Indiana lesbian couple, one of whom has ovarian cancer, but the edict applied only to that couple.
Ever since the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals became the nation's first federal appellate court on June 25th to issue a marriage equality ruling, in a case involving a challenge to Utah's ban, Boulder County, Colorado Clerk Hillary Hall has been issuing marriage licenses to same-gender couples. Noting that 10th Circuit decisions also affect her state, she's ignored statements by the state's Republican Attorney General, John Southers, declaring those marriages invalid. Six Colorado lesbian and gay couples filed a lawsuit directly challenging the state's marriage ban this week. In an unusual move, Southers then asked a federal court to declare the state's ban unconstitutional, but with a stay, in order to stop Hall from continuing to hand out marriage licenses to gay and lesbian couples in Boulder. She's already married at least three dozen same-gender couples, including an openly gay state senator. I believe it is a waste of resources for the Attorney General to keep denying people their constitutional right, Hall said. But that is his prerogative until there is a Supreme Court case squarely addressing the issue.
The U.S. Supreme Court did issue two decisions affecting LGBT people this week. In the first, the High Court declined to review a first-in-the-nation California law enacted in 2012 that prohibits licensed mental health counselors from practicing reparative therapy to cure a child's same-gender attractions. The 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals had upheld the ban on what's also called conversion therapy for anyone under the age of 18. The practice has been thoroughly debunked as worthless at best and actually harmful to a person's mental health in many cases. By refusing to hear the case, the High Court let that appeals court decision stand.
And in a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court ruled that closely held corporations can refuse to provide coverage for birth control in the health care plans they offer to their female employees if the coverage would violate the owner's religious beliefs. Equality advocates had warned that a ruling in favor of Hobby Lobby, a retail chain that had challenged the Obamacare contraception requirement, would also threaten LGBT rights. MSNBC News commentator Rachel Maddow discussed that threat on her program this week.
Since the ruling, religious groups have already started petitioning the government to say that your boss's religious beliefs can excuse him from following the law when it comes to health insurance regulations and Obamacare. If that's settled by the court, well, then these groups want their religious beliefs to excuse them from having to follow the law on non-discrimination. They now, because of this ruling, want a religious exemption from laws that say you can't fire someone for being gay because they think God wants that. Turns out the news this week is about wanting the right to fire gay people for being gay, and it's about all birth control, and it's presumably about every other conceivable advantage that conservatives think they will be able to gain by calling what they want to do that's otherwise against the law a variety of religious freedom.
That was analysis of the U.S. Supreme Court's Hobby Lobby ruling by MSNBC News commentator Rachel Maddow.
In other news, two men charged with homosexuality in the southern African nation of Zambia were freed this week for what the court called a lack of evidence. James Mwape and Philip Mubiana, each in his early 20s, had already served more than a year behind bars since their arrest in May 2013 for engaging in private, consensual, adult gay sex. The charge carries a penalty of up to 14 years in prison. They were reportedly forced to undergo so-called anal probes to determine if they'd engaged in homosexual acts. The couple has been championed by global rights groups, including Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. Despite the acquittals, Zambia is expected to be one of the next African countries to enact harsher homophobic laws. Home Affairs Minister Edgar Lungu has said that those advocating gay rights should go to hell. There will be no such discussion on gay rights, he added. That issue is foreign to this country.
A sentiment no doubt shared by what the Jamaican Observer estimated to be 25,000 people who rallied against LGBT rights in Kingston on June 28th. Several church groups joined a reportedly well-funded coalition called CAUSE, Churches Action Uniting Society for Emancipation, to rally in response to what they warn is a growing homosexuality problem. Leading Jamaican LGBT rights activist and attorney Maurice Tomlinson called the rally very frightening. He told BuzzFeed that it was a significant number of people to come to a rally, considering the population. Verbal and violent physical attacks on people perceived to be LGBT are common on the Caribbean island. People I know are trying to lay low and avoid repercussions, he said. The nation's penal code prohibits sex between men, known as buggery in the antiquated British legal system the island nation inherited. Such acts can be punished by up to 10 years in prison at hard labor. Alvin Bailey, described as the Kingston Rally's chairman, urged the crowd, according to BuzzFeed, to stand against the homosexuality agenda and against the repealing of the buggery law. Prime Minister Portia Simpson Miller had vowed to review the law during her 2011 election campaign, a promise she has yet to keep.
But finally, the iconic Wizard of Oz turned 75 this year, and with an homage to the Friends of Dorothy, look it up, kids, a drag queen in Seattle, Washington, known as Mama Tix, engaged in a winning battle of the bullhorns with a small contingent of religious protesters this week at the Emerald City's annual Pride Parade.
God is a holy God. He is the God of the Bible.
Drive that devil, you pedophile, and go home. You have no power here. Be gone before someone drops a house on you.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 5th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced this week by Wenzel Jones and Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org. where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Gary Shaw.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
Kings of Drag expand their empire later in the program. Brick and mortar bookstores have taken a beating in the internet retail boom, and many a feminist or LGBT store has bitten the dust. The A Different Light chain, Washington, D.C.'s Lambda Rising, and New York's Oscar Wilde, to name a few. This Way Out commentator and devoted patron Janet Mason turns out the lights for the last time in another very special room.
I still remember the first time that I set foot in Giovanni's Room, the beloved LGBT bookstore that recently closed its doors this past May. It was 1981, the year that I came out. I was in my early 20s when I first entered Giovanni's Room, the gay and lesbian beacon on the corner of 12th and Pine Streets in Center City, Philadelphia. The store was founded in 1973. The storefront was a rare and welcome presence for gay men and lesbians like myself, who came out in a hostile time before the television shows Will and Grace and Ellen. But after the Stonewall Gay Liberation Riots in 1969, which meant that gay bookstores and gay, lesbian, and women's presses were in existence, gay marriage was just a glimmer in the eyes of our forebears such as Gertrude Alice, and still way in the future for us. Stepping into Giovanni's Room felt like an act of courage. Years later, I stood in the long line that went up the narrow staircase to the second floor where Rita Mae Brown was signing her books. I arrived upstairs just in time to hear Rita Mae ask Ed Hermance, the owner, how many rocks had been thrown through his door window over the years. As I recall, it was a high number. On that first visit to Giovanni's Room in 1981, I bought a book about Sojourner Truth, the African-American abolitionist born in slavery and women's rights activist. The book, in many ways, was a safe pick for me. If I ran into someone on the street and they asked me where I had been, I could be honest and say Giovanni's Room, which was a feminist bookstore, too. But Sojourner Truth had been an important figure in history and someone who gave me courage in my young life. After my first trip to Giovanni's, it was easier to go back. Inside the walls of that corner city house turned bookstore, I found a community of past and present. It was where I heard activists and authors of all types speak. And it was where I became most intimately acquainted with James Baldwin, whose pioneering novel, Giovanni's Room, the store was named for, Willa Cather, Sappho, of course, and so many others. Giovanni's was a place where I came to find myself as a lesbian and as an author. I had been writing since childhood and began taking it seriously at the age of 29, the same age that Gertrude Stein was when she started writing as a daily practice. When I began to get published in journals and anthologies, I would come into the store and find myself on the shelves. When a small press began publishing my chapbooks, they were in the poetry section. I was part of many readings at Giovanni's over the years, but that is not what I remember most. Ed and I would often talk when I came into the store, and he would always let me know when a new book had come out that I would be interested in, including a new translation of Sappho and a collection of James Baldwin's letters. It was more than just good business. Ed really cared. One of the people we both cared about was Toni Brown, the late poet, who worked at Giovanni's room for a stint when she first moved to Philadelphia from Amherst, Massachusetts. Toni died unexpectedly at the age of 55. I had a very large print from a photograph that I had taken of Toni, made for her memorial service in April 2008. The photograph was displayed on the stage of the Painted Bride Art Center, where the memorial was held. Toni was a tall African-American woman about the same height as I. The service was packed with a diverse crowd. I remember standing on the stage talking to Ed Hermance, both of us crying and me handing him the photograph after the service. He displayed it in the store for a time on the wall behind the cash register. I remember thinking that I could walk into Giovanni's room at any time and see Toni. Losing Giovanni's room is in many ways similar to losing a good friend. It was a place that contained our history as a movement, as a people. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
I'm late for a very important date. No time to say hello, goodbye. I'm late.
On the go? Miss the show? This Way Out can offer you another way out. You can now hear the show on Stitcher, radio on demand. Check out the new Stitcher player at thiswayout.org and download the free app for your iPhone, Android, Nook, or iPad. Listen whenever and wherever, and give our voices a boost by rating and reviewing your favorite international LGBT radio show, This Way Out. Drag queens have been getting lots more mainstream exposure these days, what with the Tony-winning Broadway musical Kinky Boots going on tour, 6 successful seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race on Logo TV and all. But what about the other side of the gender coin? This Way Out correspondent Michelle Marie Gilkison asked an expert about performance, politics, and wearing the pants.
My name is Mo Fisher. I go by Drag King Moby Dick, spelled Mo B period D-I-C-K.
How did you get started in drag?
The summer of 95 I spent in Provincetown, Massachusetts, and I had met a couple drag kings there. They were performing there all summer, Julie Wheeler and someone who went by the name Buster Hyman. Buster Hyman did this amazing Jim Morrison impression, and it was really interesting, and it was a lot of fun. I was really impressed by it, but I thought, oh, I had some stereotypes about it. I thought, well, you have to be butch, you have to be a lesbian, you have to be certain things in order to be a drag king. So I thought, oh, well, I could never do that. I then got this ticket on Amtrak that was unlimited stopping all around America. It was only $300. It was cool. And when I got to San Francisco, a friend of mine had saved an article that was in the San Francisco Weekly, and it was about the local drag king scene there. They had featured someone who didn't fit the stereotype, bisexual, married to a man, secretary by day, and drag king by night. And the transformation was astounding. I expanded my thinking. And when I got back to New York, well, let me try this. I did a lot of research going back into history and looking at who were the pioneers who donned a suit and a mustache. And, you know, some of it was for survival and, as we know, lesbian history. Some of it was for performance sake. I hope the baby dykes of today know their history.
One thing that I love about drag are all of the endless possibilities when it comes to character. Moby Dick is this crass, super macho guy. How did you develop his persona?
I just got my hair cut and I wore my hair short anyhow. I had my hair clippings, went over to a drag queen's friend's house, Mistress Formica, who hailed New York, was this amazing, amazing drag queen. All he had was eyelash glue. So we put some on, made some facial hair, very baggy jeans to minimize my girly figure, a ski cap on. And I had just purchased from a thrift shop a bowling shirt that said Dick on it. It was just the natural extension, pardon the pun, of Moby Dick. I went out to a local lesbian bar called Meow Mix, had a ball. My friends couldn't recognize me. They were like, what? That's not Mo. No way. Through the help of Mistress Formica, I was trying out different personas. Tried on kind of the East Village grunge guy, kind of hipster, and that didn't work. And just different sailor, you know what I mean? So it was rough trade. And it was the gay, lesbian, bi, trans film festival called Mix. I was asked to perform. So I created this monologue, really heinous guy, just the schmuck of a guy, a dick. Through the monologue, I was feigning sickness and I transformed myself into a human fly. And then I lip synced to the song by Cramps called Human Fly. So the subtext of that, men like that are pests. It was a very easy, comfortable character for me. And I thought, oh, this is who my inner man is here. You know, and my motto was, instead of being an angry woman, I became a funny man.
Talk some more about the relationship between everyday anger and Mo's character. What are some of the issues you see yourself addressing in your performance?
More feminist things, the right and privilege of being a woman on the street and feeling safe. That was one of the things that made me most angry in New York City, because walking around there, you're target as a woman. When I was in drag, I thought, oh my God, I'm not getting accosted, verbally accosted. In fact, what happened was men would be like, hey, how you doing? I went, whoa, wait, wait, there's this whole international men's club I don't know anything about. So addressing the issues, just taking up space in the subway where men would keep their legs open, and anatomically I can understand, but if a woman wants to sit down, you got to move their legs in order to sit down, and just a different sense of entitlement. Putting that on stage, it gave me freedom and permission to express myself in whatever way I wanted. I was an aggressive child, and being an aggressive female child is frowned upon. Then as an aggressive woman, how do you navigate those waters? You're called a bitch. Oh, she's a dyke. Why can't a woman be aggressive, addressing those issues in a comedic way. John Waters had called me a sexual terrorist in a funny way, but he did so because I would get straight women, gay women, bi men, and straight men and gay men, which was a huge fan base, just confused and looking and, you know, having that desire, yet not quite sure what that meant. And that was actually the most fun.
I want to hear more about your gay male fan base.
Oh, God, that was so funny. I remember going to Squeeze Box, which was this really, really fun rock and roll party that was happening in Tribeca, where Mistress Formica had performed and reigned as the premier rock and roll drag queen. And being cruised by a gay man is like nothing you will ever experience. The laser eyes, where you can just feel the burning sensation go up and down your body. That was really fun. I remember standing there going, oh my God, I'd be cruised by so many gay men right now. And my friend Mario saying, just be cool, just be cool. I remember too, very clearly being in the subway in New York, and this man was cruising me, and I had a stack of flyers for my party. And so I handed him a flyer, then got off the subway and turned around, and the look on his face, he looks at the flyer and then looks out the window, and he just was astonished. I fooled him.
Tell us about Club Casanova.
The first actually internationally known weekly drag king party that was in East Village, New York City from 96 to 97. And it only lasted 2 years because at that time, Mayor Giuliani was instrumental in closing a lot of clubs and bars, targeting people for dancing. I mean, something really ludicrous, just whitewashing all of New York City. Woke up in the middle of the night and said, Club Casanova, that's the name. I got it together. You walked in, there was a drag king at the door collecting money. There were drag king go-go dancers. There was a drag king DJ and a drag king show. It wasn't a hit at first. We went through different venues trying to find the right fit. It lasted at Cake. That was the third place that we went to, and it was a total hit there and garnered a lot of international attention. Because being New York City, people always come in and they want to see what's the latest. It was actually a dump of a bar in East Village, it would make me laugh because I thought, oh my God, people are coming here from Australia, from Austria, from Japan, from Germany. I mean, from all over the world. They're looking around going, what? Because it was such a dump of a bar, but they got this whole drag king experience and were blown away. It was pretty exciting at that time.
And what happened next?
I took the show on the road in spring of 98, and that was the first ever drag king tour of US and Canada. People were intrigued. They'd never seen, never even heard or thought about anything like this. Then the next tour we did was 2001, and that was amazing seeing the progression of the drag king scene, because 98 was the advent of the drag king book. With all of that came burgeoning of drag king communities and scenes around the world. 2001, 9/11 had happened. We left New York City a week to the day after it. I was really struggling with, gosh, should we do this tour? And, you know, I had a resounding yes from all across the country. We need your laughter. We need to know New York's okay. Oh, I get chills when I talk about it. So I think doing drag is political by nature. When we traveled, we were talking about, on behalf of the men of Club Casanova, we do not support the war. So we said, no blood for oil. We had that sign on our van throughout the entire tour. And when we got to Arizona, we performed firstly in Tucson, and then we moved on to Phoenix the next night. The owner of the clubs, she called me on the way after the Tucson show and said, I don't want you to mention anything about your political stance and about the war. I would was shocked. Are you actually censoring me? Screw that. I'm going to speak my mind. And so I did it in a roundabout way. I think I made reference to Bush being pubic hair in a funny way. We're not for Bush. I'm not saying you have to shave, but, you know, it was just kind of pandered to that. And the next tour, we were not invited back. I didn't care. To me, I thought that was a really important thing to do.
You said that drag is political by nature. How so?
What's political to someone is someone else's daily life. For someone who is butch, is it political for them to dress in a suit every day? Maybe not. That's who they are. But for me, being femme, to put on a suit, that's political. It makes people question their preconceived notions of gender, of what is fixed and what is not. It becomes confusing for people. Is it easy for them to answer those questions? I don't think so. And I think that's good.
For This Way Out, this is Michelle Marie Gilkison.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones, Gary Shaw, Janet Mason, and Michelle Marie Gilkison contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride. The Cramps performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Meet the crew, listen online, check out special offers, and connect with us on Facebook, Blogger, and Google+ by logging on to thiswayout.org. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2CHR, Sesnuk, New South Wales, WHYR, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, KOPN, Columbia, Missouri, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.